We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever.
And if it was murder, then who, you know, who are the guilty parties theoretically, or, you know, speculating on that? Who would really want Michael Jackson dead? The people that would control the estate?
Well, let's put John Branca, who was Michael's attorney since the 80s. And John Branca and Michael had a falling out in 2003, and Michael fired him. And there's a copy of the letter in the suicide book. And John Branca and John McClain are executors on the will. And there was Barry Siegel, who was also an executor on the will, but he got fired too. Anyway, Branca was not supposed to have any of Michael's paperwork. A will, nothing, because he was fired, and the letter in 2003 states, and give all my paperwork to Mr. LaGrange, which was the attorney after that. Then Tom Mesereau got all the paperwork, and I've talked to Tom. Tom and I are friends, and Tom Mesereau, Michael's defense attorney in 2005, said that he never got the will, okay? Now, 8 days before the announcement that Michael died, June 17th, John Branca meets Michael at the Great Western Forum, which is where the Lakers used to have their games, the L.A. Lakers, before they moved to the Staples Center. Mm-hmm. Michael was rehearsing at the Forum at that time, and John Branca came there and was rehired 7-8 days before the death announcement. Now, that's funny, suspicious timing, but I go back to Michael's relationship with AEG, the people who put on This Is It and own the O2 Arena in London, where Michael was supposed to be doing all those This Is It live performances. Well, with the domain registrations, and you got to see the movie for the domain registrations, but anyway, LALive.com was registered in 1996. And Michael Jackson Live, it was registered in the year 2000. And we know the place where the Regal Theater opened, and pretty much the world's attention on this theater opened for This Is It, is called LA Live. So we have LALive.com. We have LA Live opening up the Regal Theater. Philip Anschultz, who owns LA Live, the O2 Arena, he owns more movie theaters than anyone else in the world. And you have Michael Jackson Live registered in 2000 and never used for anything but to sell tickets to This Is It. So I believe that leads me to the conclusion that John Branca helped ink this deal way back in the year 2000. John Branca, once he saw Michael's press conference March 5th, 2009, announcing This Is It, was working his way to get back to Michael saying, you know, hey, I got a part of this deal. It's ironclad. No matter if you fired me or not, I'm in. And that's why John Branca made an emergency and came to the Forum where Michael was rehearsing, not to an office, not when there was time, in an emergency. Well, then, if you need a gun right now, then come. I'm at the rehearsal. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, I do not believe that anyone at the time that Michael, the announcement that he died, really wanted him dead. People talk about the Illuminati, secret societies, but I think Michael was already pretty much thought of as a joke or a child molester. His image and his ability to make money and his ability to be a world-class superstar was already diminished to where it was hard for Michael to even get anything done.
Right.
So I don't know exactly who would want him dead at that particular time. I don't think John Branca or Tommy Mottola, who Michael had a falling out with, who was the head of Sony at that time, really wanted him dead because he was pretty much depowered at that point. He wasn't like a priority,
He's neutralized.
So I don't know who would really want him dead.
Yeah, yeah. So you think maybe this meeting, this hastily put together meeting, was more in line with the death hoax then?
Yes, I certainly do.
Interesting.
I most certainly do.
So if this is a death hoax, what's the role of Conrad Murray? Because, you know, he's really taking it on the chin here in a big way, because he looks just ridiculous, as you've pointed out over the course of our conversation here. So do you think he was in on it, or do you think he's like, he would have to have been in on it, I guess, right?
Well, I would think so, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Certain people, things are played out. Dr. Murray, everybody's talking about $150 a month. Well, Dr. Murray never got paid a penny. And why are you working for someone for 2.5 months, never getting a check, and don't even have a signed contract? What is that all about? Please, what is that all about? So you don't even have a signed contract, Dr. Murray? You know, and a hospital isn't even involved because the Propofol was shipped to the baby mama's house, to Nicole Alvarez's house, his girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you got
the hospital isn't even involved in the shipment of the Propofol. So, Dr. Murray, you know, I can't say exactly, you know, the whole plan and how they have it planned out, but it's planned out. And we'll see what happens in the Dr. Murray trial. We will see what happens.
Well, what do you think's going to happen? Do you think he's going to be found guilty, or do you think it's going to be sort of some kind of inconclusive thing?
Well, the whole thing is about reasonable doubt. And there was Propofol found in the stomach. And how did Propofol get in the stomach? And I believe that if this was, you know, some cryogenics dead body that has been made to look like Michael Jackson, cryogenics, there was an article on June 26th, the next day after the death announcement, about Michael's body being cryogenic, you know, next to bubbles or something. And I thought, dang, already the next day, you know, you're talking about freezing the body, my goodness. So I thought of that as a clue. And and they had to get the Propofol in the system some way, right, if it's a dead body. So it's easy to pour it down, you know, let it go down to the stomach. So, yes, there was Propofol found in the stomach. Dr. Murray is going to claim that Michael must have drank it because how else did it get in the stomach? Then there is the desperation of Michael asking nurse Sherilyn Lee for the Propofol, which led, you know, investigators to investigate about Propofol when she said Michael was begging her for it. Propofol wasn't, there wasn't a system in place to even detect Propofol in somebody's bloodstream because it's supposed to dissipate rather quickly until 2008. So there's all kinds of information that I'm just a walking Michael encyclopedia of information. So we're going to see what happens with Dr. Murray, but the surveillance tape's missing, the Propofol in the stomach, the possibility that he drank it, the desperation. Also on Michael's history tour, or Dangerous, one of the tours, there was an anesthesiologist that traveled with Michael before that and supposedly gave Michael some comparative type of Propofol to put him to sleep because he had a hard time with his adrenaline level and bringing him down after he toured and he had a hard time sleeping. Also, there's other doctors who say they have given Michael Propofol. So we don't know. I mean, you know, the doctors are going to bring up reasonable doubt. All types of reasonable doubt is going to be there. So we will see what happens with Dr. Murray. Now, I want to parallel Elvis again, bring that up.
Yeah.
Elvis's doctor was accused of overprescribing Elvis Presley. And his first trial was a hung jury, and the second one he was acquitted. Just to let people know, if you want to keep the Elvis Michael parallel going, I cannot take a hung jury and go through this again each year. Oh gosh. We will see what happens. And then Anna Nicole, what happened with her doctor, just said Dr. Murray's a good doctor and he did what he thought was best. He was acquitted in the Anna Nicole case. Her psychiatrist was convicted and Howard Stern, her lawyer, was convicted, but Howard Stern's conviction was overturned. And the psychiatrist that gave her a lot of medicines, her punishment was a $100 fine and a year probation.
Oh God! So yeah, so this could all end up being proverbially swept under the rug. I mean, this guy could get like a slap on the wrist or something. It may not even turn out. You know, he may walk away scot free. Conrad Murray, I mean.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
You know, reputation notwithstanding, of course.
I don't believe that Michael Jackson is dead. I mean, there's things that happen with me as an individual that I'm going to put in suicide too, because I'm going to write another book and probably produce another documentary as well, as far as what keeps me with a lot of confidence and what gives me strength to keep believing. And there's lots of things that happen in my life in regards to Michael Jackson personally that gives me strength to forge ahead, despite the whole world thinking he's dead.
Well, you can't just say that and not give me a nugget here. What do you mean by this? Come on, Pearl, don't do this to me. What are these things that keep you? Are you talking about some kind of indicator that you're on the right path? Well, give me something. Give me a bite.
Well, this is something that I've already pretty much released.
Okay.
There was a picture, See You in July, the autograph that Michael had that was released May 2009 that said, I love you, Michael Jackson, see you July 2009. and there's an arrow from the Michael Jackson signature to 2011. See you 2011. And with that, it was all this controversy and stuff like that. And I know it's Michael's signature because I saw it in May 2009, and I thought, why would you sign a picture saying see you 2011 when you're going to be doing This Is It in 2009? And I found that very peculiar and crazy. Why would you do that, Michael? And then this one website had said copyright claimed it and all this stuff. And these emails that I got in relation to that letter, the picture was taken on my birthday, May 6th. An email about that was on my daughter's birthday, and then another email about that picture was on my son's birthday. And you can go to MichaelJacksonInsider.com, and you can pretty much see the real explanation of the July 2011 autographed picture. And also the MJ Place, 2 days after I recorded the video and the day before I uploaded the video, the MJ Place, they went out of business. They shut their website down, shut down their YouTube page and everything. So there is a lot of, and there's even more, but you got to wait for Sue to decide. I just can't tell it all.
Okay. Well, I can hear the audience now, you know, they're saying, but it's Pearl, it's late September 2011. Nothing happened in July 2011 that, you know, so it's a myth.
No, things did happen in July 2011. The announcement of the tribute concert happened in July 2011. Also, July 2011 was supposed to be the date the trial was supposed to end because it was postponed and postponed.
Mm-hmm.
It was, the trial was supposed to end July 2011. Now, I explained that maybe Michael said, see you in July, and then he meant 2011. Who knows? But he signed that, and I can guarantee you that's his signature, and he released it in May of 2009. So maybe he had to change his mind, whatever, but I, you know, for your audience, go ahead and just watch that video. You'll see it on my website, MichaelJacksonInsider.com. Now, what will happen in July 25th, 2011, was a press conference with the family, with Catherine, LaToya, Jackie, Tito, and Marlon. All attended, and I, matter of fact, I'm wearing my Michael Forever t-shirt right now. I have it on because I can't wear any kind of Michael gear to the court. So anybody out there who's attending the trial and you want to be allowed in the courtroom as public, you cannot wear any kind of Michael makeup, impersonator, or pro-Michael t-shirt or anti-Michael t-shirt or anything. You're not allowed in the courtroom.
Leave the glove at home.
Right. Leave the glove. Well, or just don't bring it in the courthouse. You can come outside,
okay,
you know, in front of the courthouse and do that, but you can't get in the courtroom where the jury can see you.
See, yeah, because you might sway them, yeah.
Yeah, so you can do it outside in front of the courthouse all day long. Now, what happened that day was they announced the Michael Forever tribute concert, and it's to be held October 8th in Cardiff, Wales. Now, October 8th is a really important date. That's the same date of the Elvis tribute. There was an Elvis tribute October 8th, 1994, in which Michael and Janet, Lisa Marie, who was Michael's wife at the time, and Priscilla, Elvis's ex-wife, was all there, attended.
Mm-hmm.
And so that matches up along with the Elvis death hoax and Cardiff. Cardiff, Wales is a place where Michael has performed before. It's this huge stadium, 75,000 seats. But Cardiff is also the name of a hoax. The biggest hoax in U.S. history was in Cardiff, New York, and it was about a 10-foot dead body that many people thought was real, and even four doctors had confirmed that this dead body was a real dead body. And the hoax became so famous that even the Mr. Showman himself, P.T. Barnum, who Michael just loved and thought he was just the greatest showman on earth, even copied the hoax. Okay? So what we get in July 2011 are all these huge clues. Now, Catherine had already did a Forever Michael event in which they asked me to help promote it back in June 2010. So now they're calling it Michael Forever. So those were the big clues that Michael gave us in July, like, sorry I couldn't make it, but here you go.
Okay. Well, we'll get closer here as we get to the end. We'll get to sort of what the future might bring. But you also introduced the idea in the film that this death hoax was part of an FBI sting operation or some kind of investigation maybe by the government, because that raises – because when you're talking about the death hoax, and I know you say in the film that it's actually not illegal to fake your own death unless you break some laws doing it or something like that, but it would stand to reason that if Michael Jackson faked his death, that, I mean, I don't know, I guess the question is, there's a lot of questions bundled into my rant right now, so I'll try and unwrap them, but how many people could really be in the know on this? I mean, this sounds like quite an extensive operation, and maybe, as you say, if it was an FBI operation, that would help keep it under wraps. So, I mean, I guess just talk to what I'm, the line of thinking I'm throwing out there.
Yeah, well, Marlon, Michael's brother, who is the closest to age than any other sibling, Marlon, he was wearing an FBI hat the next day. Why is Marlon wearing an FBI hat? You know, what is that all about? June 26th, Marlon's outside of the Havenhurst Mansion wearing an FBI hat. Then, the same outfit that Marlon has on in the car where his brother Randy is driving him, and because Marlon lives in Georgia, Randy is driving him, and apparently they go to the taping of their reality show, Jackson Family Dynasty. Okay, because Marlon's wearing the doggone FBI hat in the doggone reality show. What is that all about? Now, the Jacksons are very savvy, okay? They know wardrobe. They know images. They know perception. I mean, they've been in the business for 40-something years. They're very astute on what to wear and not to wear. And if Marlon is wearing an FBI hat, there should be a reason behind that.
Yeah.
So we have that, which led the fans into believing. And then the FBI releases they investigated Michael for 13 years on child molestation and found nothing. The FBI found nothing on Michael in 13 years that they investigated him. Well, Brian Oxman said, after the announcement that Michael died, who was the family attorney, claimed the Freedom of Information Act and told the FBI to release the pages. Well, they released all these pages clearing Michael Jackson of child molestation, and in those pages is the confirmation that Michael's middle name is Joe. Now, when you went to the FBI website, it had a page, and they named him Michael Joseph Jackson on the page. What the heck?
Weird. Yeah, very strange, Pearl. It's all very strange.
It's all very, very, very strange. And you got to remember, the police are the one that erased the surveillance tape. Only thing that they have is 4 minutes of Michael arriving home about midnight, 12:30 a.m., early morning of June 25th, going in the house. They erased the rest of the tape for the rest of it. So we don't know who all went in that house that night.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, and that's the police. Now, another thing I have to say. Mm-hmm. There is a picture it's on my TwitPix picture, but it's a picture. And it's the memorial. And the memorial was held July 7th. And in that picture is a picture of Magic Johnson, Randy Phillips of AEG, two of the EMT. Can you imagine that? Two of the EMT officers, the paramedics, are in this picture with the producer, Ken Ehrlich, smiling. Oh, and the police chief. Why are they in the picture smiling as if they saved his life?
Yeah.
And then the L.A. police chief, you know, he resigned, resigned a few months after the death announcement that Michael had died. And why was the coroner in the third row of the memorial? The coroner attended the memorial.
Could it be one of those, I'm going to play devil's advocate again, Pearl, but just forgive me. Could it be just one of those things where the family appreciates what they tried to do, so they want them to be there?
The coroner has nothing to do with live or dead. He doesn't get the body till it's dead.
That's true.
You know, so, I mean, you could play devil's advocate, but you start stacking all this stuff up. Like I said, I did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, I did the same thing.
Absolutely. Please don't take it as I'm.
No, I get it. I did the same thing. I excused so much for 8 months. for 8 months, I excused everything until I just couldn't do it anymore. And then when I really dug deep into that, it was the most incredible story ever told, and I was going to tell it.
Well, I commend you for that, for sure. Now, you sort of introduced the idea in the film that maybe that Michael had used some kind of fake body, because, you know, I guess the greater picture of all this, or the greater question behind all this, is sort of, I'm sure you've contemplated this. I guess take me through how Michael would actually do this. Because
the easiest thing is just replace the body.
Yeah.
That's the easiest thing. And then there was real hot up in his room. And people think that the body was still too cold, you know, so they wanted to raise the temperature. So the easiest way for Michael to pull off a death hoax would not be to have a whole bunch of people involved, is just to switch out the body, because you have one EMT guy who deals with dead people saying under oath, Senoff, S-E-N-N-E-F-F, he says that he thought that the patient was an old man, a hospice cancer patient.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Now, we saw Michael, you know, 12 hours before, and this is it. Performing, and he didn't look like a deathbed hospice cancer patient. And this comes from someone who deals with dead people.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, and then you have the coroner saying that the body was in general good health. You know, so it's just all a mystery. But the easiest way that this could be done is that night, Michael had it all planned, and you just switched out the bodies. Boom. And it's easy from that point, because the body goes through all the channels it's supposed to go through.
Yeah, yeah. And he sort of greases the wheels with money to make sure that the right people who may...
No, the body is the body, you know. You know, the body's the body. They can do whatever they do normally.
And they wouldn't check. It would have to kind of look like him, though, right? I mean, you couldn't substitute, like, just, you know, some old dude with a beard, like a white, you know, like a Santa Claus looking guy or something.
No, crazy. No, it had to be a body double, something that looked like Michael. Of course,
yeah.
It had to have some kind of resemblance to Michael. And that's the only way that I could come up with to make it all simple. Or there's a whole bunch of people involved.
Right. And if there were a whole bunch of people involved, chances are this would have fallen apart by now.
Well, unless it's the sting operation with the FBI again.
Yeah. And what would the FBI, they would be sort of looking into people who would want to take out Michael Jackson.
Take him out, right. Yeah. And Michael said that there were people after him that wanted to take him out. And I, for one, I think it was in 2006, I had called the FBI and lodged a complaint against a petition that called for people to kill Michael Jackson. So I called the FBI and lodged a complaint against that petition myself.
What was this, like, stemming from the child molestation?
Yes.
Accusations and stuff?
Yes.
Oh, people are strange.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Weird.
So who knows? I have, you know, the story has not been fully told yet. But these are the things that make any logical person say,
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it made me say that, because I was just stunned as the movie unfolded, so I commend you. Now, we're going to operate within the realm that Michael Jackson has faked his death here, and we'll leave the skeptical part behind. Now, where is he now? What is he doing, and you know, what is his agenda, I guess you could say?
I guess he has a plan, and he's going to, you know, execute the plan. And also, Michael could be anywhere. I mean, Michael is a master of disguise. He's an absolute master of disguise. Jermaine has a picture of Michael in disguise in his new latest book. I found it very odd that at the memorial, July 7, 2009, that when Marlon got up and talked about his brother, he talked about Michael in disguise. I thought that was very odd. And so Michael is a master of disguise. He could be anywhere. He could be at the courthouse tomorrow.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that in the film, that there's a couple of instances in the media fallout from the Michael Jackson death where there are some mysterious characters.
Mm-hmm.
I presume you have not identified them. Well, one of them is you suggest possibly that Michael Jackson was in disguise as on Larry King as a burn victim, which I thought
right.
was, you know,
Dave, yes.
strange.
Mm-hmm.
And amazing. And I mean, I don't, you know, and that takes, we're already talking a really you know, forgive me, Pearl, but that, we're talking a really ballsy move here to fake your own death. And then then to appear on Larry King Live in disguise in the aftermath.
It's a ballsy move for a little black kid, a little black family, to think that they can be the most world-famous entertainment family in the history, and one of them would be the biggest superstar in the world. That's ballsy, too.
Absolutely.
But it happened. It happened, okay? So you're talking about people's lives who have turned straw into gold. You're talking about Michael, who really has, you know, thick skin, who has been through hell and back in the media, who would do something like this.
Yeah, that actually, now that you say that, that stands to reason in a way, because he would kind of get the ultimate, you know, response or tweak against the media, who really vilified him for all these years to fake his death, and then to sort of screw him in a way, you know, to say, ha ha, I got you back, you know what I mean? And I can
see exactly
the
right.
motivation
That's
in a way.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And then you have Lou Ferrigno, you know, in interviews right after the announcement that Michael died, saying, Michael used to put dummies in ambulances and ha 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 and love pranks. And you're like, what?
we've touched on a whole bunch of different clues, but I feel like we maybe might be missing some. I mean, what other sort of like big clues stand out that we can use here to sort of sway any audience members that are on the fence?
Well, I think that now is the time to tell the listeners that they gotta watch the movie.
Absolutely, yeah,
Michael
absolutely.
Michael Jackson really did. Because there was so much information here, and they need to brush up on it and hear it in context and hear it very, in a way in which I tried to make it as chronological as I possibly could. And then also the e-movie book, Suicide, that Michael Jackson faked his death to save his life. I have a patent pending on that book because that's the one and only book where you can read and watch movies at the same time. Because what happened when I was writing the book, I wanted to show everybody proof and evidence of what I'm saying. And so the book is filled with links. So as long as you download the book to any computer device that has an internet connection, you can read the book, and when a link comes, you can click it. And believe me, when I published the book May 2010, all the links worked. But some of them may work, may not, may be moved, but most of them still work. And so you can watch and read at the same time. So with the e-movie book, I would suggest to go ahead. We've given you so much information here. And hear the rest of the story.
Yeah, yeah. Nice plug there. I like that. You're good, Pearl. Now, you do say in the movie that it's not illegal to fake your own death unless you break some laws doing it or
right.
do some fraudulent stuff with insurance. But I feel like if the death hoax is as we've laid it out here, there has to be some kind of illegality involved. I mean, you can't be running around with a fake dead body that, you know.
I don't know the laws. I'm not a lawyer, an attorney, but I'm sure Michael has them. And I'm sure they've looked everything up, and I'm sure that they've crossed I's and dotted T's, and some illegal activities just are fines. You can, like Casey Anthony, for example.
Yeah.
She was acquitted of all criminal charges, but they made her pay for the court costs.
Right.
They are going to make her pay for the court costs. So maybe Michael, you know, if he has to pay for the Conrad Murray trial, not a problem. You know, and he has lawyers to help him out. Now, there is a series on, I think it's Discovery Channel, and there's a series now called I Faked My Own Death. It's a TV show.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because I was going to say, you rarely ever hear about people who fake their own death.
Isn't that weird timing?
Strange.
And I watched the series the other day. There was even a black guy that got burned and mentioned Michael Jackson. And he, when the law finally found out he faked his death, since he did it to save his life, he was not punished.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yes.
So are you of the belief that we're going to see a Michael Jackson comeback?
I hope so.
Okay, that didn't sound very definitive, though. I mean, obviously, it's out of your hands.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I'm giving facts. It's left up to people to, you know, draw their own conclusions. What I try to do is just tell you what's out there, tell you the information that's out there, and leave people free enough to draw their own conclusions based on information and facts and as much information as possible.
Okay, but I'm going to go back to this now still. I feel like this story... this death hoax, if Michael Jackson faked his own death, it stands to reason that he has to come back. That's just how I feel. I mean, I can understand why he'd want to leave and disappear and get out of the limelight and everything, but at the same time, ostensibly he can't really visit his family, or maybe he can sort of sneak and visit them, but it's like, I feel like he would be compelled to come back given his nature, the nature of his personality.
Absolutely. Michael loves to be loved. And with Michael loving to be loved, it will bring him back. And I don't think he left all these clues not to come back, you know. And I'm hoping that in his heart of hearts, he will come back and shock the world, because that's what the Jacksons do. He is the greatest entertainer that's ever lived.
It's hard to prove a negative, but is there anything that could convince you that he is dead?
Undo all these facts. Undo all these facts, perhaps, you know. There will come a time where it's not as important to me. If Michael faked his death or did not fake his death, it is what it is at one point. But I'm hoping we're all on the right track. I mean, Michael's fans are very diligent, and I didn't discover all these clues. Michael's fan, there's a whole death hoax community out there that searches for clues, finds them, discusses them, verifies, and double checks them. So Michael's fans really deserve, and that's why you see over 200 credits and at the end of Suicide and also in Alive, because those are the fans that have contributed their hard work, and I'm telling you, they have been absolutely excellent in their investigation.
Right. Well, this is the kind of story, too, that, you know, if we're sitting here 10 years after the death of Michael Jackson and he still hasn't made his comeback in 20 years, 30 years, at some point you kind of have to wonder what really happened there. Maybe he didn't fake his death. That's the sort of thing that would convince me, I guess you'd say. Absolutely.
Yeah, time will tell. But right now it's definitely not over, because tomorrow's the start of the trial. You know, the Conrad Murray trial starts, so it's definitely not throwing the towel time yet.
And do you expect a lot of information? Obviously, there's going to be a lot of information that comes out in the trial. I have a feeling you're going to have your eyes peeled for inconsistencies that will help, you know, massage this death hoax story.
Yes, I will be releasing videos on YouTube. I will be doing live updates on my Twitter account and Facebook, and also on my website, MichaelJacksonInsider.com.
Okay, what's the Twitter feed?
Twitter.com, and it's at Pearl JR, PEARLJR.
Okay, and Pearl Jr.
And
also
I bought a new
Facebook
tablet to make sure that I'm good. I'll be able to tweet right from the actual courthouse, not the courtroom. We're not allowed to do it from the courtroom.
Okay, that's
the courthouse. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So you'll be providing us with information on the situation as it unfolds, because
right. And also, you got to remember that it will be televised as well.
Oh, okay. So we can look for you in the audience.
I should, if the audience comes my way, I'll be there.
Oh, excellent. Now,
if the camera comes my way, I'll be there.
I gotta bring it back, I guess, to just the critics, the skeptics, the doubters, you know, and I appreciate all that you've given us here tonight, and obviously I appreciate all the listeners who stuck through this interview and really with an open mind. What do you say, and what does the death hoax community say to, you know, the skeptics who say, and I don't mean you personally, Pearl. This isn't an attack. This isn't a pejorative thing. This is, you know, just a psychological type of thing. You know, that all you guys in the death hoax community, you just can't let him go. You just can't let Michael rest in peace, and that you have to accept the fact that he's dead. Like, I'm sure you've heard this argument before.
Oh,
so like,
plenty of times.
What is your response to them?
You don't know what I know.
All right. I like that. Okay.
It's really that simple.
Well, that's true in a sense. It stands to reason, because a lot of people, they watch the news and then they don't really, you know, they accept what they see on the news. They're not going to go follow the story here that maybe Michael Jackson faked his death. Plus, people have been conditioned to not believe that kind of story via the
Elvis
stuff.
Right, they've been conditioned to not believe it, absolutely, because Elvis never came back. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So, all right.
And that makes it even more genius on the behalf of Michael Jackson.
How long do you think he was planning this?
I think, well, the first 1994 is the first time that in print it says Michael Jackson plans to fake his own death. And that happens to be the same year that Michael attended the Elvis tribute in 1994. So I believe it goes back to 94, and I also believe that he planned on doing it around the year 2000 too, because of the Invincible album. And you hear him saying, I'm unbreakable, I'm still here, heaven can wait. So with the Invincible album, I do believe that Michael had planned on faking his own death with Invincible, because of, you listen to the songs and even the word Invincible as well. And also that's the time that with the Rabbi Smoley tapes, the Michael Jackson tapes, and he had did that book at that time, the audio book that didn't come out, that Rabbi Smoley didn't release until after the announcement that Michael died. So I believe that this has been a plan of his for many, many years, but he had to make sure that he wasn't wanted by the police, because, you know, he had two big things that happened in his life. So after the allegations in 2003, I think it really prolonged him doing the death hoax back then.
Now, what about, you know, Michael Jackson clearly loved his children.
I believe they know, of course.
I presume they do know, obviously, you know.
Those kids sure did bounce back quick, didn't they?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I guess it would stand to reason then that if he faked his death, that he still maintains contact with them, because that would that would break a father's heart to walk out on their children like that.
No, the kids would know. Yes, and even with the Twitter, you know, there's little clues that happen from family members with their Twitter accounts and stuff like that. So, of course, the kids are all, you know, like moving right along. Daddy's dead, but moving right along, you know. So I definitely believe the kids not only were know about it, but they were prepared.
Interesting.
And they were prepared for this.
Well, I find it strange too. You know, and this probably goes beyond the death hoax, but just that for all these years of the children growing up, they were like completely sheltered from the media and everything. And now that Michael Jackson is ostensibly or allegedly dead, you know, it's like there's no barrier, no protection for these kids. And you know, it was like, to me, watching the Michael Jackson memorial, obviously the most stunning and heartbreaking moment was when his daughter started talking, because it was like, it's, you know, you're hearing from someone who really we had never ever heard from before. It was, that to me was just like something very bizarre and stunning and just overwhelming.
Until you'd learned that she had an earpiece.
Oh, she had an earpiece.
She had an earpiece in her ear, and that when you really look at it, you know, the tears really didn't fall. Of course, my heart was broken, just like the world's heart was broken when she did that. I was under the impression that not only did she lose a daddy, but I lost, you know, somebody that I've been in love with since I was a child, mm-hmm. you know, as, you know, a fantasy love, you know, my idol, my superstar as well, that I shared her pain at that time. And then, you know, Joe, you know, week after the memorial, Joe said, yeah, Paris wants to be an actress.
Very interesting.
There you have it.
Again, this one also kind of goes beyond the death hoax, but as you know, you're saying here that, you know, Michael Jackson was your superstar, and obviously you loved all his work and everything, and I have a good friend who is in the same position. He, you know, is a huge Michael Jackson fan. We were kind of talking about this. I just wanted to get your sort of take on this. It's sort of like a double-edged sword in a way, since the death or alleged death of Michael Jackson, that so much new material has come out, and he's really sort of, his reputation has been restored, and it's sort of like a bittersweet situation.
So whoever killed him didn't do a good job of destroying him, did he?
Well, theoretically, wouldn't the people that wanted to kill him, this is exactly what they wanted, to rebuild the reputation so they could milk it like Marilyn Monroe and Elvis and everybody else.
But the only people that are really getting paid, you know, really are, you know, the Jackson estate, which is a living estate, by the way. They're the ones that's making all the money. You know, you got two executors, John McClain and John Branca, and you have Catherine and the children, and then other people would make money off of Michael. Sony's back, you know, recording for Sony, Circus Soleil. All these ideas that Michael had that he couldn't get done when he was living are now getting done now.
Right, right.
You know, so I think that I think it's worked magnificently. You know, the death hoax of Michael Jackson has been a tremendous success.
And like, to get back to sort of the question I had, just as a fan, how does that make you feel to see him vindicated, you know, and back on top, and it, but at the same time, he's ostensibly gone? Do you know what I mean? How's that feel? Bittersweet or what?
Bittersweet, absolutely. It's definitely bittersweet. Mm-hmm. Because I miss Michael Jackson. I was a fan of Michael Jackson, but of course you grow up, you fall in love, you get married, you have your own children, you have your own life, you have real life loves, you know?
Yeah.
And Michael just becomes kind of a memory of love, a childhood crush type of thing, not reality. So when I went into that 2005 trial, I wasn't a current fan of Michael. I wasn't currently obsessed with Michael. You know, I was just kind of going because someone asked me to go, and then I ended up, you know, learning the truth and really changing the direction of my life to be an activist for justice for him. And I'm a fan who can say on this earth that they never liked or danced or sung to one of Michael Jackson's songs? You know, most people have been a fan of his one way or the other, music, song, dance, video, the person, the man, the humanitarian, or whatever. So I'm not alone in at one point being a huge, huge fan of Michael Jackson's.
No, absolutely not. I mean, mm-hmm. He was popular all over the world.
Yeah, but I'm also honest and fair, and I'm also a mother, and there's no way on heaven's earth that I would defend someone who I thought was guilty of molesting a child. There's just no way.
Yeah, yeah.
There's just no way. You could be Jesus Christ, and if you were wrong, you're wrong, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you know, like I said earlier at the start of the interview, it all seems, to go back to sort of that bittersweet, emotion. It just, you know, you see, it's just like sort of galling in a way to see the mainstream media at now they're sort of like telling a more fair story about the trial and everything else. It's like they, you know, it's like where was all this fair perspective when the trial was happening? It
absolutely, wasn't absolutely, it wasn't fair at all. It was a lynching of a guy and his reputation, and they didn't care about his children then. You know.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
It was unfortunate, yes.
Well, I think you've done a fantastic job here laying out the Michael Jackson death hoax case. And, of course, there's so much more in the film. Alive, is Michael Jackson really dead? And, of course, the E-movie book, Pseudocide, did Michael Jackson fake his death to save his life? You've teased us with some future stuff. So what do you have in the till? What do you have cooking? I know you're obviously heading out to the Conrad Murray trial starting tomorrow, but you know, what kind of stuff can people look forward to from Pearl Jr.?
Well, please just log on to MichaelJacksonInsider.com, and there's other stuff on there. There's a lot of more videos on there. So if you're in a Michael fanatical state, there's a lot of new, surprising, shocking information that is on that website. And I have been preparing and keeping up with my notes to write Pseudocide 2, and I will do that. And then we may follow it up with another documentary.
Sounds good. Well, I hope if Michael Jackson comes back, that you get the credit you deserve, and that he brings you up on stage maybe on that big return concert.
And give me a big, huge, huge, huge hug.
There you go, exactly. Well, on that note, Pearl, I can't thank you enough here for coming on the show. I appreciate your open-mindedness and allowing me to sort of take the skeptic's route at times just so, you know, we could really bolster this case as best as possible. And I appreciate you giving us so much time and really laying out the details of this death hoax theory. Like I said, I first saw the movie and was like, what is this? This is, you know, I can't believe someone has this opinion. And then having watched the movie, it really gave me a lot of food for thought. And I'll be keeping an eye on this whole Michael Jackson story over the years and seeing how it develops. And quite frankly, at this point, I would not be surprised if Michael Jackson just popped up out of nowhere and made some big comeback in the next few years. It does not fall beyond the realm of possibility in my mind, and that's thanks to your outstanding work and the work of the folks in the death hoax community as well. We can't forget them. So thanks again for coming on the show, Pearl.
Thank you so much.
That does it for this edition of BOA Audio Season 6.
Big, big thanks to Pearl Jr. for coming on the show. Check out our website, www.michaeljacksoninsider.com. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio listener feedback. And we got one long one, two short ones, one's a response. And I want to do a plug before I get into that. So a lot to talk about here. I want to plug an upcoming appearance. I'll be on Paul Eno's Behind the Paranormal this coming Sunday, October 16th from 7 to 8 p.m. And you can find out more about that at behindtheparanormal.com. Now let's dive on into the BOA Audio Listener Feedback Mailbag. The first one comes from Julie, no hometown listed, but residing in Massachusetts. Here is what she has to say. I am a huge fan. I wanted to write to you because I think you are really good and deserve encouragement. My husband and I are also Massachusettes in your age range who like to ponder what you call the esoteric. I especially have been obsessed since birth with UFOs, abductions, mutilations, etc., and everything that my dad would call the occult. In addition to this, we also really like beer, so there you have it. The only thing I don't like about your show is that there aren't more of them. You are polite and considerate of the guests, but you don't kiss their asses, and you aren't afraid to ask questions. You actually seem to listen to your guests, which makes for entertaining conversation. Keep going with your own flow. I'm trying to write a book myself on Cape Cod and its mysteries. Maybe you'll interview me someday. I don't know if anyone's written a book about it yet, but have you heard of the case of Ursula and Sabina Erickson? Very interesting shit. It would make for a good show. Tie it into the super soldier thing or mind control or something. Anyway, thanks for all the wonderful hours of entertainment. Julie. No hometown listed, but residing in Massachusetts. Thank you for writing in, Julie. One of the reasons why I picked out this email is because it's kind of strange. We got two husband and wife emailers over the last couple of episodes. I don't know what it says about BOA Audio, but I guess it means that we are family entertainment. Yeah, like I said, thank you for writing in, Julie. I would be psyched to meet up sometime with you and your husband, grab a beer, and talk the esoteric. I'm always happy to meet folks who listen to the program and live within range of BOA HQ. Thank you for your very, very kind words about the program and my style. I have not heard of Ursula and Sabina Erickson and their story, but I will definitely check it out. Sounds very, very weird. And finally, of course, Julie, best of luck with the book on Cape Cod and its mysteries. Keep us posted, and once things get rolling, I would be happy to have you on BOA Audio. Next email is a short one, comes from Brock, no hometown listed. Here's what he has to say, or should I say ask. He wants to know, do you guys have an email newsletter letting people know what audio shows are coming up? Be of good cheer, Brock. No, Brock, unfortunately I do not have an email newsletter letting people know about upcoming shows. Part of that is just because this entire operation is haphazard at best. So adding the additional stress and strain of a newsletter would be a huge problem for me and something that quite honestly would get easily forgotten by me over the course of about a month. So no newsletters from us. Just stay tuned to binallofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com for updates on future editions of BOA Audio. Or stick around to the end of the program where we give a pretty lengthy preview of the next edition of the show and read emails from folks like you. Final email is a response to the end of last week's program. It comes from John in China, also known as the Meanie. Folks who tuned in last week will remember that John wrote a very dastardly email criticizing me for the lack of programs in September, and I flailed at him at the end of the show. Well, he wrote back this week in response. He says, touche. At least the drought ended with a good hard rain. Keep up the great work. John in China, also known as the Meanie. Thank you for responding, John. It's good to know you have a sense of humor about things. I was sort of just poking at you at the end of the show last week, and it's good to know that you're not flipping out that I chastised you at the end of the program. Best of luck over there in China. Hope everything's working out for you there, pal, and I'll keep an eye out for the invading armies. Maybe there'll be a BOA Audio fan in the midst named John. Those are the emails here this week for BOA Audio Listener Feedback. Tried to keep it a little short this time around. Want to give a shout out to Mary in Seattle, who sent a very long email about spontaneous human combustion. I want to read that very badly, but I'm not going to do it this week here on the show. So we'll tackle that next week. That might be a standalone email for BOA Audio Listener Feedback, because it's about 6 paragraphs long, but very well written and very thoughtful. So I want to get to that next time on BOA Audio Listener Feedback. Mary in Seattle, sit tight. Your missive has been heard, and next week it will be read. But what about all the other folks out there who want to correspond with me and send me some emails and thoughts on BOA Audio as well as Banal of America? That's simple. There are a number of ways to get in touch with me. You can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com or go to banalofamerica.com, BINNALL of America.com, and click the contact button. And of course, the final method is to join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. If you can't tie together all those letters, head on over to BOA and click the forum button. Want to mention that there is a very spirited and lengthy conversation going on at the BOA forum between a variety of members who tuned into last week's Butch Witkowski episode and have had a lot to say about the end of that program. So if you're interested in the Butch Witkowski controversy, head on over to BOA's Paranormal Playground, theusofe.com, because the conversation continues there. And I also should mention here, since I'm calling for the usual correspondences, if that's even a word, from the BOA Audio listeners, that I have really fallen behind on the inbox, but I'm going to tackle that stuff this week and start getting back to folks. Some people, I read their emails on the show, I don't even write back to them, let them know that I got their emails. So I got to send emails to those folks. I got to get in touch with all the people who've been writing me over the last 6 weeks or so. I've read all your emails, trust me, I just have not had the time to respond, and I'm going to get back to you guys post haste, I promise. And the final plug here for getting in touch with us, that of course is the social networks, Facebook and Twitter. Head on over there, punch in Banal, B-I-N-N-A-L-L. That'll bring up my profile. Feel free to befriend me, follow me, or poke me. We'd be happy to have you as part of our online circle of friends. Now, if you'll indulge me, please sit back while I thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff. Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Rochelle Hawks, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, our contributing cartoonist Andy Carolan, and our webmaster Jeremy Boston. We say it all the time here at the end of the program, but it is the truth, my friends. If you're only listening to BOA Audio and you're not reading the columns at Banal of America, then you're only getting half the story. BOA, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. Now comes a time in the program where I finish my proverbial song to a light smattering of applause and then gesture hungrily towards my guitar case and ask you to throw some change in the bucket. I think I mixed like 8 metaphors there, but the point is now is the time in the program where I ask you to make a donation to BOA and BOA Audio. How do you do that? That's simple. You can go to banalofamerica.com and click the PayPal button. That'll bring you through to the PayPal website. It's very secure, and they will walk you through the process on making a donation. But I know there are a lot of folks out there who don't trust the internet, and they just want to make donations via snail mail. That is also an option here. You can mail your donation to Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866, and you spell Pinehurst, P-I-N-E-H-U-R-S-T. So altogether, it's Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. And if you're making a snail mail donation to the P.O. Box, all we ask is that you make your donation payable to Tim Banal and not Banal of America, because my bank is anal and they will not cash those checks. And, of course, please include an email address so I can shoot you a line and say thank you for your donation. wrapping up the donation aspect of the program, as always, I feel I need to stress, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the entire franchise up and running, freely available, and commercial-free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. Next time on BOA Audio, we've got both a heartbreaking and heartwarming edition of the program with our guest, Dr. Greg Corbin, author of Beyond Reason, Lessons from the Loss of a Gifted Child. Greg is going to share the story of his son, Brian, who, shortly before his 9th birthday, revealed to his family that he believed he would not live to see double digits. Eerily, Brian's prediction proved correct when he died months later. Greg is going to recount the myriad of clues and knowing behavior exhibited by Brian leading to his death, as well as the series of strange incidents following the tragedy, which indicate a stunning self-awareness possessed by Brian with regards to his impending death. We're also going to talk about other children who have predicted their death and how the phenomenon is chillingly pervasive. It is an episode of BOA Audio that may have you reaching for the tissues and will certainly have you very spooked out. That's next time on BOA Audio. And on that note, we close the book on this installment. Big thanks once again to Pearl Jr. for coming on the show. Thanks again to Julie, Brock, and Jim for contributing to BOA Audio listener feedback. And last but certainly not least, I want to thank you folks out there, the hardcore BOA Audio listeners. You guys are the best. I'm trying to tighten the reins here a little bit on the program, trying to come at you around every 10 days or so. We're looking at the finish line here of Season 6. I'm going to have more information on that in a couple of weeks. It's been a wild season. I wouldn't trade it for anything because the content this year has been just stunning and stellar, in my opinion, and I hope you've been enjoying the ride. This program would not continue without your support and encouragement. So thank you, thank you, thank you for everything you guys do for BOA. It is not lost on me, it is not forgotten, and it is certainly not overlooked. Thank you for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. And until next time, this is Tim Banal, signing off.